You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 2nd of November 2014 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're exploring the philanthropic activities of investors around the world, in particular in the United States. Here, charitable donations by wealthy individuals have continued unabated in spite of a global downturn and turbulent markets. We'll hear what the leading experts believe is the most effective way to give time, talent, and treasure to good causes, and ask how easy it is for donors to align their charity, their investments, and their wider interests. We start by assessing the findings of a new report looking at the state of philanthropy in the US today. Samir Arora, Head of Client Strategy at UBS Wealth Management Americas, headed up the team behind the report, and he sets the scene for us.
The state of philanthropic giving is very much alive and well. We were curious to research and understand whether affluent and ultra-high net worth consumers here in the U.S. are still giving as generously in terms of their philanthropic efforts as they did leading up to and before the recession. And what we found was that the giving gene in America, if you will, is very much alive and well. And virtually everybody, more than 90% of the affluent people we talked to, reported back to us that they had either given their time or they had given money in the past year. When I look at this country as opposed to other parts of the world that I have worked and lived in, I do believe that Americans, and I think this really cuts across even wealth bands, and it's common across the wealth spectrum, is that Americans do believe in giving back. They have a very strong giving gene, and there is a sense of contributing towards the less fortunate in society. And so even though we see overwhelming response from affluent consumers who all said that they're active in philanthropic efforts, I think this really does cut across the broader society as well.
Samir Arora. So how do modern American attitudes to philanthropy help maintain what has been a long and rich history of charitable support? Kathleen Burke, Professor Emerita of Modern and Contemporary History at UCL, charts the origins of the philanthropic movement.
If we want to look at big money, this really is after the American Industrial Revolution, let's say 1870 to 1900. You then start getting Andrew Carnegie, for example, the great steel man. My small town in California has the town library was built by Carnegie money. So the idea of spreading education went from there. Of course, the Rockefeller funds, the Ford Foundation came up. So yes, the idea of huge amounts of money going for health and social need and infrastructure is a very big American thing. And also one has to think of philanthropy as going overseas. But between the First and the Second World Wars, the Ford and the Rockefeller Foundations were over in Europe trying to establish international relations places to try to bring the idea of international law to a wider audience. So philanthropy in the United States started out small with individual people, churches, grew from the proceeds of the industrial position, and grew very much in the interwar period. What we see since 1945, of course, is unbelievable. They would not have dreamed of the Bill Gates Foundation or Warren Buffett giving $27 billion or the sorts of foundations that have more money than half the countries in the world. What we see in the U.S. right now is competitive philanthropy, aren't we? You give $20 billion, I can give $25 billion. You give $25, I can give, and so forth, which is rather a good thing. But remember, in America, if you give your money in a philanthropic manner, that goes against tax. Are you going to give it to the federal government? Are you going to give it working against AIDS? Are you going to give it to your alma mater? Are you going to give it to Harvard or Berkeley? Or are you going to give it to the federal government? That is a real key, is that people aren't losing money. They're getting a very good PR for giving money where they want it to go, rather than to the government.
The destination and the effectiveness of charitable giving are understandably at the forefront of any potential philanthropist's mind. From New York, here's Michael Crook, head of the Portfolio and Planning Research Group in UBS's Chief Investment Office, explaining how the sort of wealthy individuals he advises calculate this impact.
That's one of the bigger trends that we see in philanthropy in the United States, but I think this is true globally, that donors are very interested in understanding exactly how their dollars are used and quantifying the impact of that giving. What you find is in certain situations, there can be issues where charities simply can't handle all of the donations that they're receiving, and the impact of the marginal dollar, of the next dollar donated, declines substantially. I think donors are much more interested in understanding that than maybe they were historically. We certainly see some clients who define legacy as essentially something that lasts after they're gone. But when you think about, you know, even the higher profile philanthropists in the United States, people like Bill Gates, they tend to be much more focused on actually solving an issue than they are in building buildings right now. And I think that trend is something that we see filtered down to people of all wealth levels in the United States, that they have causes they believe in and they want to see some traction made in terms of resolving those issues. And that's the legacy in itself, is being part of the solution to those problems, more so than necessarily having a library with your name on it 50 years from now.
Michael Crook. The question of efficiency in philanthropic giving is central to the advice that leading analysts issue to their clients. Bill Sutton Jr., head of client philanthropy at UBS for Wealth Management Americas, expresses his concerns and his strategy for how best to address them.
The donors in general, high net worth, ultra net worth donors in general, are unhappy with the impact of their giving. Only one in five believe that they're even though they all give, only one in five believe that their giving is actually effective. That was very striking to us. The goal is to help our clients and donors move from the spray and pray philanthropy approach, you know, where you put a lot of money out there and you pray for the best results, you hope for the best results, also called checkbook philanthropy, but to move from spray and pray to more of a thoughtful strategic philanthropy. And to help our clients do that in two ways is important, and it could be simply helping them with tactical ideas, identifying the best assets to give, because some assets are better to give than others, as well as the best giving vehicle that fits their family and their personal situation. That second part is to be more specifically strategic, help them build a giving plan. Only 4% of individuals out there have a giving plan, a written giving plan, and then to help them determine what is that philanthropic ROI, what is my return on my philanthropic investment. And if we help them do that, you know, embrace thoughtful planning, then we can help them feel better about that. Well, I think we can help philanthropy be more efficient.
When it comes to our various approaches to philanthropy, it seems many prefer a more business-orientated, or at the very least, a more business-like strategy. Teresa Lloyd, philanthropy researcher, fundraising advisor, and former director in international development, explains.
It's a business transaction in the sense that they expect the organizations they support to be business-like, in the sense of professional, to review the impact of what they achieve, to learn from mistakes, to be truthful about the mistakes, and to treat the significant donor, the significant philanthropic investor, as though he or she were a major shareholder. And sometimes people use that as an analogy. So in that sense, it is businesslike. But of course, the investment that is expected is not financial. Mostly it is about the impact on people's lives. And obviously there's a huge question about how that is measured and how that is assessed.
Could there be an even more entrepreneurial approach to this sort of altruism? Many givers take a more results-driven view, known as venture philanthropy. We asked Richard Ross, chairman of Rose Trees Trust, which supports medical research, for his view.
Most people come at charity from a good-hearted point of view, which is very nice, but it's not always totally focused. In recent years, a new breed of people have come along who've often made their own money, perhaps in business, perhaps in some successful venture. When they look at charity, they have a very focused idea of what they want to do with their money. And once they've picked the area of philanthropy that they want to support, they want to make sure that not only that they give the money, but that they get results for their money. So it's, I regard it as a business approach where you put down the money and you say, what do we get back for the money that we spent? Well, usually the problem with the business, comparing it with the business, is in a business you put down money and you get money back, so there's a direct comparison. With philanthropy, you're putting down money. Let's assume you're helping people who can't read or are suffering illnesses. It's much, much harder to work out exactly what the benefit is there, so you have to devise a system where you can analyze what results are coming out and then assess whether or not those results make it worth the cost.
Looking ahead, is there a sense that modern philanthropy could herald a new golden age of giving? Perhaps even one to rival the post-industrialized era that Kathy Burke described earlier. Bill Sutton certainly thinks so.
We are close to that, I believe, that second era, or second golden age, with massive wealth concentration that's out there now. And that next-gen folks, they really do point the way because they're looking at new ways of giving, which is why I think it's the second golden wave, which will be very different, obviously, from back then. But I think the millennials are looking to be more practical. They're looking for outcomes. They're looking for results. They're looking to how, you know, philanthropy informs more than just their giving. It informs their purchasing decisions. They're looking to align their investing with their personal values and their philanthropic values. And that is a massive shift because it's not just giving. You're then looking to move capital markets and investments. And I think that is going to change as well. And it's a core value of our millennials. And I think I'm excited about that because I really do see them as kind of breaking the stereotypes about their generation. In fact, I see them leading philanthropy into that second or that next golden era. We're going to see some massive change. And I think we're going to see that the millennials lead the way.
But is there a tension between the millennials and the interventions of government? After all, the great philanthropists of the past didn't have to contend with the tax burden anything like today's wealthier individuals do. Not so, says Teresa Lloyd. She believes that the private and state realms are in fact perfect bedfellows.
Somebody said it's the role of the state to pay for the basics, and it's the role of private philanthropy to make the basics the best. And I think that's a very good expression, a very good phrase, and I think a lot of people see it that way. The state cannot do everything. Also, I think there's a realization that philanthropy, and I perhaps broaden that to include giving time, expertise, as people say, time, talent, and treasure to volunteering, and that is the glue that holds society together. So I personally would certainly argue that even if the welfare state was not in the position that it is, it's hugely important, particularly with increasing wealth disparity and so on and so forth, that the wealthy are seen to play a part in society, if only for reasons of enlightened self-interest.
Enlightening indeed. Richard Ross would surely agree. After all, he is keen to stress that other rather intangible benefit of philanthropy, namely that it can deliver a quite unique return on investment. It can make people feel good.
The culture of modern society is all about building up your own wealth, looking after yourself, let the state worry about everybody else. And as we know, the state hasn't got enough money to worry about everybody else. So not only can people who've got money help, but they've got skills and expertise and tenacity, which if they apply to whatever charity they want to support, they can make a major difference. In my family's case, we support medical research. And we are as good as anyone in the world at it. And it's just amazing to meet the people doing this work. And if people would just dip into whatever philanthropy like, see what difference they can make, they would so enjoy doing it that they would be on that path and they would become very happy.
Richard Ross of Rose Trees Trust. Reacting to all these challenges and opportunities is far from easy. A good idea, then, to get some advice. Here with a closing thought from New York is Bill Sutton Jr., who ends the Bulletin with UBS with our regular client view.
I think for our clients right now, it's 3 points. Number one is to take a pause at where you are in your philanthropy with your family and embrace that thoughtful idea of planning. So check in with your family, particularly as we get into the heart of the giving season, particularly right here in the States, is to check in with your family. Secondly, I would say take a look as well at your investments and think about your investments as an extension of your values. And if our clients are thinking about this, we know that our next generation clients absolutely are. And so it's important for all of our clients to think about this. You know, can you align your philanthropic assets with your philanthropic mission? Are they working in concert together? And then thirdly, I would say, you know, look at issues that are going on right now. What can we do now on Ebola? And how do you give smartly? And how can you avoid the issue of what happened with Haiti, where there was massive amount of assets that flew in incredibly well-intentioned, but it ended up being quite a tragic mess. So number one, thoughtful planning. Number two, aligning your values with your philanthropy and your investing. And number three, how can you be strategic and still tactical around and smart about the response to Ebola. Those would be the three things I'd share.
Bill Sutton Jr. in New York. And that brings us to the end of this fourth edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or tune in via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.